We are coming to the point in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus gives six teachings that take the form, "You have heard that it was said, but I say unto you," in Matthew 5:21-48. Before I read that text, I want to remind you that at the very end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, the person who hears, listens to what I have to say, and actually puts these words into practice is like the man who builds his house upon a rock. So the reason we spend months and months in the Sermon on the Mount is so that we can learn to hear and listen, so that we can begin to put things into practice. And the thing that strikes me as I've been doing this study again for the umpteenth time as a Christian is, what a high calling Jesus calls us to, and how counterintuitive it is to the way we tend to live life. It requires discipline of our minds and our hearts and our lives to actually walk in a different way than the way that the world walks. So hear the word of the Lord. You've heard that our ancestors were told, you must not murder. If you commit murder, you are subject to judgment. But I say, if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. If you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell. So, if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. When you are on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to an officer, and you'll be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you've paid the last penny. You have heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery. But I say, anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your hand, even your strong hand, causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. You have heard that the law says a man can divorce his wife by merely giving her a written notice of divorce. But I say that a man who divorces his wife, unless she has been unfaithful, causes her to commit adultery. And anyone who marries a divorced woman also commits adultery. You have heard that our ancestors were told, you must not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you make to the Lord. But I say, do not make any vows. Do not say by heaven, because heaven is God's throne, and do not say by the earth, because the earth is his footstool, and do not say by Jerusalem, for Jerusalem is the city of the great king. Do not even say by my head, for you can't turn one hair white or black. Just say a simple yes, I will, or no, I won't. Anything beyond this is from the evil one. You have heard that the law says that the punishment must match the injury, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. If you are sued in court and your shirt is taken away from you, give your coat also. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. Give to those who ask, and don't turn away from those who want to borrow. You have heard that the law says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven. For he gives his sunlight to both the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the just and the unjust alike. If you love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Even corrupt tax collectors do that much. If you are kind only to your friends, how are you different from anyone else? Even pagans do that. But you are to be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. The word of the Lord. Oh, good. There's a few of you out there. Matthew 5, 21 to 26 deals with having right relationships and the connection between anger and murder. Jesus says three amazing things here. First, he says, if you're angry with a brother, you're under judgment just as sure as if you had murdered. The judgment for murder was to be taken outside the town and be stoned. Even if you've not committed murder, in other words, you say, I'm not a murderer, you have the same level of guilt as a murderer if you've been angry with your brother. Second, he says, if you call your brother raka, or an idiot, an imbecile, he says you're liable to the council. When he talks about the council, he's talking about the great Sanhedrin. It's like he's saying you're liable before the Supreme Court. Third, if you call someone a fool, you will face the fires of Gehenna, which is translated hell. It's the valley of Hinnom, which was used for the worship of Moloch and became a metaphor for fiery judgment. In Jesus' time, it was probably a garbage dump outside of Jerusalem that was constantly burning. So it became a metaphor for judgment. Jesus is saying, if you're angry, you're liable to all those things. And if that anger comes out in words and not just in deeds, you're under the same judgment as if it had come out in deeds. Now, I don't know about you, but I hear that and I'm thinking, really? Glenn Stassen says that Jesus is dealing with the vicious cycles of anger, broken relationships, isolation, and even violence because of our captivity to self-defeating habits or ways of domination. I like the way he says that. Jesus is teaching that God is doing something new in our lives to deliver us from this self-defeating cycle of captivity. In order to live into the kingdom life, we need to learn a new way of reading Scripture, Jesus is saying, and live into that new way. So he quotes Scripture, not just human additions to it, but he quotes the Scripture. But he ends up probing the text in order to get behind the text to the kingdom intent underneath it. He quotes the Bible, but then he reinterprets the Bible. He extends it. He deepens it. And sometimes even counters it in order to reveal God's redemptive purposes through it. You've heard that it was said those in ancient times were taught the law has been understood to say, do not murder, but I say, do not even be angry. Instead, be reconciled. So I'm going to talk a little bit about anger. But I'm going to talk about it not as a psychologist. I'm not going to talk about it the way Don Shive would talk about it, because Don knows a lot more about anger than I do. I'm talking about it from a kingdom perspective in terms of what Jesus is getting at. Jesus begins by calling attention to the traditional biblical teaching of the First Testament, do not murder. And then he moves to unpack that commandment by pointing to the source of the problem, which is the vicious cycle of anger and judgment. We live in a constant posture of anger, anger that we nurse and allow to fester, anger that manifests itself in ulcers and heart attacks and bitterness and acting out in physical and verbal abuse, and sometimes even murder. First week after I moved here, 22 plus years ago, there was a murder as a result of road rage right on this I-25. Guy gets out of the car, blows the other driver away. Angry. Bitterness. Bitterness takes place all the time. I see it in divorces. Deep bitterness. Festering over the years. And it ends up, maybe not in murder, but destructive choices. Or acting out in physical and verbal abuse and in school shootings, military base attacks. I mean, there's all kinds of ways we see anger being acted out. I find it interesting that people are asking, well, why is Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump getting so much play? And all the talking heads are basically saying because both of them are tapping into something that's happening in our culture right now. There's an anger in our culture about the way things are. And they're frustrated and they want things to change. Well, when we nurse that kind of anger, when we live in that kind of anger, what we do, Jesus is saying, is we serve death rather than life. Jesus is saying that the prohibition against murder is just the surface expression of a deeper problem, this problem of unfettered anger. When he talks about this in Matthew 5, 21 to 26, he's interacting with and transcending the laws that have to do with murder and trials and revenge that are found in Numbers 35 and Deuteronomy 19, which deal with the penalties for murder and the role of the cities of refuge in the life of Israel at that time. He's making this connection between anger and action. I don't think he's telling us to never be angry. I think just a surface reading of the text would lead us to that, but I don't think that is what he's talking about. That would be inhuman. No, I think what he's doing is he's telling us what to do with our anger and what not to do. In the Greek, there are two different words for anger. One is thumos. It's used for the kind of anger that flares up and then dies out. And the other is orge. It's an anger that is nurtured and fed and fueled and stoked and ends up in destructive words and actions. And it's orge that Jesus is talking about in this text. He's saying, don't give in to the kind of angering that festers and ends up in an orgy of anger. Sometimes we nurse the anger in our hearts and it erupts into something ugly. Paul and James address this issue too. Paul wrote to the church in Ephesus, don't sin by letting your anger gain control over you. Don't let the sun go down while you are still angry, for anger gives a mighty foothold to the devil. Again, I don't think Paul is saying, don't be angry. He said, what do you do with that anger? What kind of anger are you going to express? And how are you going to express it? And what are you going to do with it? James says, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Human anger does not produce the righteousness God desires. If we are going to be righteous, and righteousness has to do with right relationships, if we are going to be involved in right relationships with people, in our families, in our church, in our neighborhood, in our nation, in this city, it doesn't matter where you are, if you are going to be in right relationships, you cannot let the kind of anger that orge talks about take hold and take root. Again, anger plays a role in our life. There's an appropriateness to anger sometimes. We all get angry now and then. And we also all know, if we're honest with ourselves, that there are times when we stew in our anger. There are times when we make choices in our minds of what we're going to ruminate on over and over and over again, and we feed the anger. We also know when anger has led us to alienation. Sometimes alienation from God, from family, from friends, from neighbors, from church, from co-workers, from fellow students. Jesus is diagnosing the danger of that kind of anger. It's like a doctor who says, "Bill, you have melanoma. If we don't remove it and treat it, it will kill you." The first murder of the Bible occurs in Genesis chapter 4. There we read, "When it was time for the harvest, Cain presented some of his crops as a gift to the Lord. Abel also brought a gift, the best portions of the firstborn lambs from his flock. The Lord accepted Abel and his gift, but he did not accept Cain and his gift. And this made Cain very angry, and he looked dejected. And the Lord asked Cain, 'Why are you so angry? Why do you look so dejected? You will be accepted if you do what is right. But if you refuse to do what is right, then watch out. Sin is crouching at the door, eager to control you. You must subdue it and master it.'" It's the same language that is used when Jesus, when God says concern after the fall to Eve, "Your desire will be for your husband, but he will master a rule over you." Here we have sin crouching at the door, and its desire is for you. And his method of getting at you is through your anger. And what he wants to do, what the devil wants to do in that sin, is to rule over you, to take control of your life, to take control of your thoughts and your feelings and your actions. And God says, rather than that, you must master it. So one day, Cain suggested to his brother, "Let's go out in the fields." And while out in the field, Cain attacked his brother and Abel, his brother Abel, and killed him. And afterward, the Lord asked Cain, "Where is your brother? Where is Abel?" "I don't know," Cain responded. "Am I my brother's keeper?" But the Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." Now, this is a story about Cain's anger at God and his brother that actually does, in fact, lead to murder. Cain is bringing his sacrifice to the altar to worship. In the midst of this very religious act, he gets angry. And God warns him about his anger. Sin is crouching at the door and its desire is to master you, but you must master it and do well. Master it so that you can do well. But Cain ignores the warning, nurses his anger over time, and ends up rising up and killing his brother. In a similar manner, Jesus is calling on this little story to remind us of what it looks like to live in the kingdom. Jesus is warning us about the danger of stewing in our anger, the danger of wanting to rise up and insult someone, to call him or her a fool, an idiot, a blockhead or a butthead, a moron, a moral fool, incapable of good. I can't believe the number of times I've heard Christians talk about other Christians in exactly that kind of language. It's destructive and it leads to death. He also tells us what to do with our anger, how to master it, and how to not let our anger rule us, how to get to a place so that we can do well. Jesus' solution? Go and talk to the person. Make peace and be reconciled. Take the initiative. Go and find your brother or your sister. Talk things over. make peace, bring, he tells us in Matthew 18, take other people with you if you need to help you in the process. Be reconciled. Master the demon of anger and then bring your gift to the altar and worship God. We are to live with a certain degree of intentionality about establishing and maintaining right relationships, and to live in such a way that right relationships take a priority over everything. It's interesting to me that Jesus is saying having a right relationship has a priority even over worship. And God actually shows us the way as well. In his anger over sin, he could easily remain distant, refuse to come to the table, no negotiations with my enemy. But he didn't. He takes the initiative, and he comes to us personally in Jesus Christ, the Messiah, his one and only Son, for the very express purpose of making peace and creating reconciliation. That is grace, and that's the gospel. That's what Paul says. God has reconciled us to himself, and he's given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is the good news. So when you talk about God's anger, or even Jesus' anger, because he got angry, that anger is rooted in love. Can we honestly say always that our anger is rooted in love? If someone were to ask me, if your anger is always rooted in love, would you please raise your hand? I could not raise my hand. Because sometimes my anger is not rooted in love. There are times when it has been rooted in love. And when it is, it reflects God. And when it isn't, it reflects the evil one. God asked Cain, "Why are you angry?" I think we need to ask that question of ourselves. When we're angry, why am I angry? It's a question that invites us to do a bit of self-diagnosis. What kind of cancer is this that I'm flirting with? To do self-diagnosis and then also take responsibility for our own anger and do something redemptive in it. I don't think it's easy. I don't think it comes like falling off a log. I think sometimes it takes a long, long time to work it through. Nevertheless, I can't let myself off the hook. Because if I hear the words of Jesus and listen to him and actually put them into practice, it's like building my life on a rock. This is what kingdomized living looks like. Instead of staying in and stewing in our anger, instead of separating and distancing ourselves, except possibly as a temporary strategy, gospel living seeks to connect, to take the steam out of the anger through talk and render our anger impotent through reconciliation as far as we are able. Sometimes we seek to be reconciled with someone, and if they are not willing to walk with us in that, there's not much we can do. This approach moves us from the destructive powerlessness of being held captive by anger and frustration and resentment and bitterness and rage, and sets us free to move toward the empowerment of participating in God's grace and new way of living. It's a process, as I said, sometimes a long process, a difficult process, maybe even a painful process, but a process that leads to life rather than death. Come now, breath of God, and breathe life into us through your Holy Scripture.